Okay.
I don't have two hands.
Hey, Maren.
Oh, wait, we don't have video. Hello, my name is Maren, and welcome to Sibling Scribbles.
My name's John. I'm your other host. This is Sibling Scribbles, a creative podcast, a sibling podcast for the creative process.
That's so embarrassing.
I was just waiting.
My gosh. Okay. Oh, today, man. We are just doing an audio recording because my face is so sunburnt and John shaved all of his hair off.
It's true. I'm bald now. I'm going as Walter White for March Halloween. Have you not heard of March Halloween before?
There's nothing to carve, but that's okay.
You carve a four-leaf clover. It's very difficult.
Today, we are going to be talking about men and women in film. So some
right.
of the archetypes, some of the stereotypes, some of the power levels, all of the things.
I don't know why you're talking like that. That's really upsetting to me.
I was like getting into it.
Oh,
okay, can't see
okay.
my hand, but I'm getting into it.
Okay, all right, let's get comfy. So this is like a conversation that's been happening a lot lately,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like we're very much late to the party, right? This conversation was like huge during 2023, like most of 2022, I think as well. Where, mm-hmm. and I think it is kind of still happening because of feminism. We're not going to make this political, but
you're not.
The issue is that there is really great representation of men and women in fiction, right? There's fantastic yeah. representation for men and women in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also really, really bad examples of masculinity and femininity in fiction as people yeah. attempt to kind of
make a dialogue off of that.
Right, right. We are specifically talking about Barbie. We are specifically talking about...
I just watched it. It was so pink.
It's very pink. I when I watched it, so I did the Oppen Barbie, right? The Oppen Barbie, which is the
nice.
Oppenheimer followed directly by Barbie, which was a huge mistake. I do not recommend it.
Model film.
Christopher Nolan is exhausting emotionally and intellectually. Mm-hmm. And the end of his movie... ends with Christopher Nolan, right? It's Cillian Murphy staring directly into the camera, but it is Christopher Nolan saying the words to you, like, what if our creations destroy the world, right? We use our creations to try to uplift and support and build and nurture the world, but instead our creations actually end up doing the opposite of what we intend. And so...
Also, Cillian Murphy's voice is so luscious.
Thank you, Maren, for your take on Cillian Murphy.
I can't even be like, he's so hot, because he's cool, but like...
I wouldn't consider him like a traditionally attractive man. He's not a chiseled individual.
But
right?
just like Benedict Cumberbatch. Like, they both have kind of like their own look, but they're still like good for all of the crap that they're in. Like, they're always super well casted.
They're fantastic, yeah. They're both fantastic.
Oh, and his voice...
Okay.
Is he British or is he American?
You know, I think so. He's not American. I don't
because
know.
I watched Oppenheimer right after we watched. Oh, it's the World War II movie with Harry Styles in it.
Oh, then I don't care.
No,
I hate Harry Styles.
So good.
I could beat Harry Styles
Dunkirk.
In a fight.
Dunkirk.
Oh, I've never seen Dunkirk.
Yeah,
actually. That's the
well,
only.
Cillian Murphy's
I seen.
In that too, and I'm like, ugh, his voice.
Cillian Murphy's in a lot of Christopher Nolan's films. I think
they're besties.
Yeah, you know that they're just like having sleepovers and like kicking their feet. What yeah. movie do you want to do next? I was thinking about Oppenheimer. No way. I was thinking about Oppenheimer.
What's the guy in Inception? And he's also in a bunch of Christopher Nolan
Leonardo
movies.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No. He's the guy who's like, you have to use your imagination. And he like pulls
oh,
out the
Oh my gosh, I know what you're talking
bazooka.
About.
Bazooka. He is also in a ton of Christopher Nolan
movies.
Oh,
he's Bane. He's Bane.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. Listening audience, I'm so sorry. We are putting you through this. Tom Hardy.
Yeah, you know that they're kicking their feet. They're like, you call Tom Hardy.
No, you call Tom Hardy. And Tom Hardy is like over there playing Venom, just like, losing his mind.
And then he like his phone rings and he's like, cut. Hi.
Hi, Chris. This is unlistenable.
Is Cillian Murphy there? Oh my gosh, Cillian. Cece.
Hi, Tom.
Besties for the resties.
Oh, man.
Okay.
What were we talking about? Oh, right. So then I watched Barbie.
Right.
So I watched...
Right
after Oppenheimer. And so I'm immediately thinking... Sorry, I had to check if my mic was backwards. I just had to be sure. I'm immediately thinking, like, the creations that we have massive effects on the people who consume them. And so we need to be responsible with the things that we're saying.
Right.
Otherwise, it will have a massive effect on things. And Barbie was narratively all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It tried very hard to be funny while also being real. And because it tried to do both, it ended up failing miserably at both. And it ended up saying a lot of messages that I don't think it intended to say. If that makes sense, right? Like it's for example, you can go ahead. I snap so you can.
What? I didn't know that was a rule. I would snap him out. Really bad at snapping.
Okay. The reason that I think that it was a problem was because the messages that they wanted to send ended up getting really, really muddied.
Because there was a lot of different female, male messages going on.
Yes. So much so that there's actually a very large amount of people who think that Ken was actually the hero of the story, right? People who watched the Barbie movie and Ken, who in the movie, right? If you follow the movie, Ken is supposed to be the villain, right? Ken and Will Ferrell, kind of, but
oh, I didn't really see him as a villain.
Will Ferrell?
No. Like Will Ferrell's, he's obviously the bad guy because he's the man in his suit.
Sure, yeah, he's the man. Yeah, yeah,
right.
The company man.
Right, but I never saw Ken as a villain.
Right, but that's the point, right? That's my entire point is that I was watching it coming out of Oppenheimer, so my mind was like going a million miles a second. And I was like, what are they trying? Like, what is she trying to say about men? What is she trying to say about the patriarchy? What is she trying to say about women? Mm-hmm. And what is she trying to say about, like, all, you know, I'm thinking of 100 different things.
Right.
And, but the truth is, like, Ken is like the most fun part of that movie, right? Ryan Gosling owns every single shot that he is in, not every scene, every shot that he is in. He dominates everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious, which is not what the movie was supposed to be about.
I don't know. That's the thing, because every time he was on screen, I was like, yes! Yes!
My favorite line in the entire movie is, honestly, when I found out the patriarchy wasn't about horses, I kind of lost interest.
Okay, it was so funny. Like, he was just a mad lad, you know?
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong. He was just like, I like this girl. She doesn't like me. And so he was like, I went to a world where men are respected. And then he tried and did that back in Barbie Land, right?
Right.
And honestly, the Barbies had it coming.
No, they absolutely did. Okay, no, I want to counter that. What did the Barbies have coming?
A revolution.
Okay, but was it though? Because everyone was actually having a great time. I mean, yes. All right, the president was serving beers to guys playing volleyball.
Yeah.
But the way that they rationalized that is they said that, you know, they were brainwashed, which didn't make any sense. There was no. I didn't understand how that was possible. Were the Barbies brainwashing the Kens before? Is brainwashing just something that anybody can do? Right?
Yeah, like, that's a good point. But that's the thing. It's because, like, in Barbie Land, the Kens are treated really poorly and kind of, like, kind of pushed off to the side. But then in, like, the Kendom, Kendom land.
The Kendom.
They treated the Barbies, you know, not super great, right? But in their own, in the Barbies' opinion, right? But then they don't solve that and like make them.
No.
Both cherished.
They do. Right. You know? Instead, they actually like laugh at the Kens for even implying that they should be equals.
Yeah.
Right. They say like, oh, maybe when women in the real world have as many representatives in Congress and in government, then you guys will get some too. Like they've made that a joke. Uh-huh. But by not actually making that change in the story, you've actually kind of proved the Kens right.
Yeah.
Which is not the point of the story.
Okay. One part of me that like gave me the big ol' ick was when they were trying to like overthrow the Kens, right? And so they were like sending the women in to do things to like make the Kens feel
it's degrading. You know, like, empowered.
I was like, okay, but I'm married to a man and I'm obsessed with him and I love him so much. And do I do those things to like make him feel like his opinion matters? I mean, like, yeah, but it's not like a oh, he's so stupid for caring about sports and music and cars. Like, no, like his opinion matters a lot.
Right. We care what, like you care what he has to say. You care what he likes. Yeah. It's
you, and he loves sports. Thompson is like one of the most, like the only person I know who loves sports more than him is his younger brother. And like they compete that love of sports.
You know what? I can see that. I've only met that child two times.
Grant?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. He's a mad lad.
He's an absolute mad lad. But you wouldn't like pretend to like something of his for an afternoon so that you could get something out of him.
No.
That's friggin' gross and manipulative and weird.
Yeah, I ask him tons of questions. I'm like, so how does this work? And how does this work? And he's like, well, let me explain this, you know, baseball position to you. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, do I super duper? I'm like, oh, this is something I'm really, really interested in. He's like, no, maybe not. But I'm like, I care that he cares.
Right. By asking about those things, you actually kind of show him that you care and you show him that you love him.
And I want to care about the things that he cares about, even if right now I don't.
Right, right.
So that part like really gave me the ick because I'm like, okay, but you're saying like, this is how we like control them. This is how we like get back at them by being fake for all these things. And I'm like, no, that's how you actually make like a good relationship. Like, let him
if you do
be
it,
the man.
I mean, when you do it right, right? When you do it right. And instead, like, they said, like, you. Yeah, it was almost like they were making fun of healthy relationships, right? A little bit.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I don't know how to use Photoshop. Like, how do I select the thing? And I'm like, okay. So you're trying to be like mansplaining and that's like a bad thing.
Right, but like they're baiting the men into mansplaining.
Right. Like right? If you were actually frustrated with it and then someone came over and was like, here, let me help you. You wouldn't be like, oh, what a mansplainer.
Right.
You didn't Google it. That's your your problem, girl. You have the tools necessary.
I don't know. It's just like if you're going to ask someone for help, you can't be upset when they help you.
When they like give you instructions on how to do it.
Right. There's this attitude of like, I shouldn't have to ask you to do something good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then when you do ask, then you never ask them and then they do something good and it's a bad thing.
Right. Right. Like if I was, I mean, I kind of get it because sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm just so frustrated. I can't get this thing right. And then, you know, like my husband swoops in and is like, here, let me help you. And I'm like,
open
no,
this jar of pickles.
I'm like, no, I can do it. Like I can figure this out. And I'm like, yeah, I could, but he could just solve it right now and it would be over with.
But like, that's not the point, right?
Yeah.
Like I get that too. I absolutely get that. Haley is incredibly capable. She's a very, very capable woman. And it bothers me sometimes how capable she is. I'm just like, gosh dang, like you are very self-sufficient. Like,
yeah.
Me not being around actually gets things done. That's kind of
that is such a mood for me too.
it's being creatives. That's the problem. We're just
no, I contribute. I contribute.
We do. We have ways that we contribute, right? We have contributions, but we. what I'm getting at, the whole point that I'm getting at is that relationships are an art form, mm-hmm. right? Relationships are very much an art form, right?
It takes years and years to get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, absolutely. But it is something that you have to work at, and it's something that is different for every couple, right? Because it is, it's not even like, oh, you're peanut butter, I'm chocolate, so we're going to mix this together, and peanut butter chocolate always works. It's like, no, you are a unique type of peanut butter, and they are a unique type of chocolate, and you have to figure out which peanut butter and which chocolate goes together. It is such a mess trying to figure out how to relationship,
right.
much less how to, like, make broad generalizations about relationships, mm-hmm. right? It's not fair. It's not clever to say, like, oh, all men are like this. It's like, no, the heck they're not. Like, Seth,
no, they're
right?
not.
Our brother Seth is not like any Ken, right? Like, Seth is...
Or like Alan, or like...
Yeah.
Like any...
Heaven's sakes,
not a single man represented him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was lumped into that entire group.
Right. And I would hate for women to be lumped into one large group as well. Like, the Barbies kind of do, like, despite, you know, everyone being like, I'm Beach Barbie, I am House Barbie, or whatever it is, mm-hmm. by lumping, like, they do all act the same. There's not actually a diversity of character among them.
Yeah. They gave women all the diversity, and for the men, there was, like, nearly zero.
Well, I'm saying that, I mean, yes, you're right about that, but
that
I'm saying,
too.
Like, there is no while there is diversity among looks with the Barbies, they mm-hmm. all think and act the same way. There's no actual, like, difference except for, like, weird Barbie, right? Weird, gross, disgusting Barbie.
She reminded me of Pink. You know, the singer?
Like the singer Pink?
I actually thought it was Pink.
For a second.
Who was playing her. I was like, yo, I love her music. That's great. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, it's not.
Oh, that's not her. That's not her.
Because she has, like, the same, like, low voice. And,
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's true,
hair.
Yes.
I guess not weird. Pink's hair looks really nice, but weird Barbie's hair was also cut short.
I wish I could rock Pink's hair. I cannot.
Ugh, Pink.
But I do mean to kind of hit on that point, is that the movie kind of said, right, either implicitly or explicitly, mm-hmm. that there are normal people, right, and then there are strange people, there are different people.
Right.
And those are kind of your two options, right? You're either, like, very, very normal, or you're, like, a weird freak that everybody loves, right?
Yeah.
The movie was very inconsistent. We could talk the entire time about that, but mm-hmm. I really do want to talk about men and women in fiction.
Right.
And that's kind of where I want to go with this. And
okay.
I especially want to talk about men and women in fiction in Porco Rosso.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
Yay.
Yes. It's not just because of the cool poster on your wall, but
Aww.
I've been thinking about this. Porco Rosso, which is a Studio Ghibli movie by Hayao Miyazaki.
It's my favorite movie.
Haley, my wife, hates it. She thinks is the worst.
It's so wonderful.
I did not love it when I watched it, but the longer I've sat on it, the more I've come to appreciate it. I really, really like what the story has to say about men and what the story ends up saying about women as well. There's a line in it where she says, there's the young girl.
Fear.
Right, let me set up the whole scene. Porco Rosso is a pig man, and he flies planes.
If you haven't seen it, you have to watch it.
You need to go see it.
It is my favorite
it's
movie.
It's not even like an hour and a half long. It's like maybe an hour long. It's very, very short.
It's so good.
It's excellent. There's
a lot of people don't like it. It's one of Studio Ghibli's movies that is probably one of the least watched.
And I think it's because it's the least understood. The movie is about fascism, right? The movie is about fascism. The big line is, it's better to rather be a pig than a fascist, right? And we can talk about fascism some other time. I don't know enough about fascism to have a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or a real depth one. I'm cutting that out. But Porco Rosso needs a plane. He goes to these people in a town. They're building him a plane. But all of the people building the plane are women. And the girl who's designing the plane is a very young woman. She's like in her teens at some point, right? She's maybe like 16 or something.
She's 17.
17. And she says, like, you know, at one point she says to him, like, hey, do you, like, disrespect me? Like, you don't respect me. Is it because I'm a woman? And he's like, yeah, that's actually about right. And she goes, oh, okay.
She's like, that's fair.
That's fair. She says, that's fair. That's insane.
But she's 17 years old. And so she's a young girl, and the person, like, the people who usually work on his plane are, like, these adult men. But because all of the men are off to war, all of the women have to fill in so that their family business gets income.
That's right. That's right. And it is.
And so Porco's like, there's no way that I'm letting a bunch of women touch my plane, which is like a special antique.
Right. It's plane. His.
There's
like
only one of these planes ever made.
Yeah. It's a custom build. Right. It's right. His favorite thing in the whole world. But this girl says, oh, okay, that's fair. And then she proceeds to prove him wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's not this big feminist moment. And that's what I was expecting. I've come to just been trained mm-hmm. from movies to expect this girl to have this big, like, but I'm strong. I am a woman.
I am strong.
Yeah. Just everyone claps and they're like, yeah, F you, Porco, you pig. Right. Like, that's what I expected. But it wasn't that. Instead, she kind of just took it on the chin and she was like, you know what? Yeah, you think that I can't do this because I'm a woman and I'm going to prove you wrong and I'm going to be amazing. And she ends up being kind of the heart and soul of the movie.
And Fio doesn't have to be like, you know, women aren't valued enough in this society. And like the women who work on the plane aren't like, Porco, like, we're going to show you, like, a woman can work just as hard as a man. Like, no, they all walk
in.
It
doesn't happen. And the women end up proving themselves far more.
While still being women.
Right.
Like,
right. They're being feminine.
Uh-huh.
And we see later, we see the contrast of that. We see a large group of men flying in on their planes for a big fist fight.
Yeah.
And it is the silliest, and it's a silly moment. In fact, it is kind of critiquing a machismo masculinity, right? This is a moment that should be like, men are so dumb, right? The love interest, she flies in on her plane.
Gina.
Right? Gina shows up on her plane and she's like, mm-hmm. you silly men, there's a war happening. And
she's like she's like, okay, the fascists are coming to arrest you all. You guys should all come to my bar. Drinks on me. And everyone's like, yay, Gina!
It's a great movie. Love the movie. But it says a lot about, like, it condemns machismo masculinity. It's like, this is very silly, mm-hmm. right? But it's...
But they're fighting for Fio's honor.
Right. They're fighting about honor. And mm-hmm. so, like, while their machismo is silly, the reason that they're doing it is not, like, downplayed or degraded. They are saying, like,
right.
what these men are doing might look very silly, but the reason they're doing it is good. Right? And so you have to kind of respect it a little bit.
Yeah. Because there's not a lot of, in the real world, at least nowadays especially, there's not a lot of moments where men get to defend a woman. Like, they get to say, I'm going to put my life basically on the line to, or you know, at least a few bruises on my face on the line to defend you and say, you know, like, hey, don't treat my woman like that, which is very attractive. And... you know, for a man to stand up and get in a fist fight over you, you know, like, that's probably one of the most honorable things. And now our relationships, they're not like that. So
it's interesting that you bring that up. It makes me think of Pride and Prejudice. We'll come back to Porco Rosso because it's an excellent example. But Pride and Prejudice does not feature a duel. Although you think when Wickham runs away with Kitty. Mm-hmm. When Wickham runs away with Kitty, you think there's going to be a duel.
With Lydia.
Is it Lydia?
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a minute. But he runs away with Lydia. It's very clearly a scandal, right? The family's going to be ruined.
Like, none of the other daughters will get married. They'll all be thrown out of the house.
Reputation has been demolished by two horny young adults, right?
Right.
And at that point, you really... You know, what's her... The mom. I'm going to have to move my mic away for this. She goes, oh, your father's going to have to get into a duel and she's going to kill him. Oh, he's going to die. Right? Like, yeah. She says this and you actually kind of think for a minute when Darcy like goes on like a, like Darcy gets this look in his eyes and he's like, oh, I'm going to freaking find Wickham. You think he's going to show up with a sword? You think he's going to find Wickham and kill Wickham and resolve the conflict that way? But instead, Mr. Darcy resolves the issue by like through his connections
mm-hmm.
and through his reputation and through his wealth, right? His security that he has.
Right.
And he saves the honor of Elizabeth, right? And of the whole family. Right? He rescues the whole family.
Even
and their
though
honors.
He's so against the family because he loves Elizabeth.
Yes.
He's like, I will put aside my pride and, you know, my prejudice towards your family.
That's the name of the movie.
So because I do love you, and that's a super honorable thing. There's not a lot of instances where that can happen in the real world, you know? They're much, much smaller. So kind of the fantasy of the film is that he puts aside these entire huge character traits that he has in this movie because he loves her.
Right. It's friggin' hot. It's so hot.
Everyone loves Darcy. I would love to meet someone who hates Mr. Darcy as a character and just have a conversation with them and be like, hey, like, tell me why, because I have never met anyone like you.
If you did end up in a conversation about Mr. Darcy with someone who didn't like him, you probably would end up in a fist fight defending his honor.
Probably. He's such a wonderful character.
He is.
And every girl is like, oh, I want a handsome prince. Oh, I want a Mr. Darcy. You know, it's...
We want... Let me tell you what women want, Marin. Let me tell you what women want.
Oh, okay. Actually, before you do, in Barbie, the depression Barbie, the imminent death Barbie, thoughts of death.
Oh, yeah, thoughts of death.
And they're like, and she, they do a little commercial.
Right.
And they're like, she cries, you know, and she comes with sweatpants and, you know, a 3-day-old t-shirt. And she watches BBC Pride and Prejudice.
That's right.
I was like, you know what I like.
It's a little, yeah, I feel a little called out. I feel called out.
Is it true though?
Yeah. Look, there's nothing wrong with BBC Pride and Prejudice and some sweatpants and a gallon of...
I watch it every year. Watch it every single year.
I can't convince Haley to watch it. It's very long. It's very boring for her.
I get sick once a year, and then I just watch it while I'm sick.
Oh, I see. It's a sick binge.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You just have a big old thing of ice cream.
I'm like, I know I have a fever. My fever will break in 48 hours.
So I have 48 hours to watch Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Darcy and Porco Rosso are dangerous individuals. But they're not, but they're honorable men, right? That's kind of the trick, right? Is that both of them can defend someone's honor, but they only choose, like, but instead of defending their own pride, right? Instead of just lashing out and hitting anybody who's close enough to hurt their feelings, instead they are reserved and they wait to defend someone's honor. And that is...
That's a good point.
That is a very good way to portray masculinity. We see that with Aragorn.
I was about to say.
Yes. Aragorn. Shout out to Pilgrim's Pass, my favorite YouTube video YouTuber.
So good.
But he did this video on how Aragorn is the perfect example of masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn does not once stand up to defend the honor of a woman, but he lets a woman down very, very nicely.
No, but he does it so nicely. But okay, but I saw this other thing. They're like, if Aragorn looked at me like this, I don't think that I would have, you know, quit as fast. And it's like all these screenshots of like Aragorn like doing the little...
It's the dreamy look. Yeah. We all know the look. Aragorn's my favorite. Aragorn's my absolute favorite. Because he's an excellent example of masculinity. He is a hero king, right?
Yeah.
And it's a very... old concept, the hero king, and it's one that we've very much moved away from culturally, but it is one that we still find very attractive. It's still one that we see in Porco and we see in Mr. Darcy, and it's one that you're right, we don't have a lot of opportunities to show anymore. I think that things with the internet and laws and guns make it a lot harder for a fist fight to break out over someone's honor, right? So being someone of honor is something that is proven nowadays, at least in real life, over a lot of little actions.
Yeah. So it's like when I was talking to Isaac recently, we're just talking about relationships and stuff, and it came up where I was like, a lot of men are like, oh, I would do anything for a girlfriend. Like, I just, like, I only have these three things that I want in a girlfriend. Like, and that's it. And I'm like, you say that.
The list.
But, you know, because, you know, like, I want them to be, you know, politically aligned with me. I want them to be the same religion. And I want them to be a female, right? And
harder than you might expect.
Right. But I'm like, you say that. But what you don't realize is that there's so many little tiny sacrifices that you have to make to the your own things. Like, you are really good at getting gifts, but she doesn't like gifts. Like, she only wants, you know, verbal affection.
Right.
Or it's like, she really doesn't like this. And so, but that's one of your favorite things. So you have to figure out, well, okay, well, I guess I don't talk about that as much anymore. Or
yeah, that's very much with Haley and I. Her love language is physical touch. She likes being snuggled. She likes an arm around her shoulder. She likes it when I just, like, you know, rub her back or just, like, hold her hand. It's right. I'm not like that. I don't love being hugged. I've learned to be okay with it with Haley, but it's not something that came naturally to me. It wasn't something that I just understood. Haley needs to feel an expression of love right now. I am going to go give her a hug. I'm going to go give her a kiss on the forehead, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those things that did not come naturally to me. I was learning a new language, right? A new love language.
Right.
And you're right. You're right. Like, relationships are it's an exercise in communication. It's an exercise in cross-cultural communication.
Yeah, you come from different family cultures and you expect certain things and you want certain things, but you both have to, I'm not saying like just the man has to sacrifice. Like, women have a lot of sacrifice that they have to do too to make the husband feel loved. But those big, you know, duels, like we're saying, those don't get to happen. It's all of these individual line upon line, precept upon precept kind of moments.
That's right.
And which is kind of a bummer. But
there is
more sustainable through the eternities.
Yes, it is. There are still grand moments. There are still grand romantic gestures that you can do. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, you're right, it is far more sustainable. Relationships are not they're not an episode. They are a life, and we believe to be eternity, right? We believe that we are establishing a foundation of forever.
Forever and ever. I can't even wrap my mind around it.
We cannot fathom. It's without fathom. Unfathomable. Without fathom. Whoa. I love Megamind. Yeah. But it is. It is an exercise in communication. It's an exercise in little things. It was something that Haley and I said when we first got married is, I said, like, look, I know I'm not ready. Like, I don't think either of us are ready to marry each other. Like, we both have a lot of growing up to do. And Haley said, right, but I want to do that growing up with you. It still melts my heart thinking of her saying that, because that's what a relationship is. It's saying, like, we'll never be ready. I'm doing little air quotes, ready.
Can you hear them?
Yeah, you can hear it. But it is something that you grow into. It's something that you work on, you work towards. And I think that going back to Porco Rosso, we see that with these main characters, with these women, right? They're not manipulating the men, right? The women do not manipulate the men.
Not at all.
They are putting in work. They're just saying, like, we are going to work on this, and we are going to build a foundation.
And then Porco has to do the work too, because he finds out that Gina loves him, and
he has to make the changes necessary,
right?
So that he can be a part of that.
He can't be pig-headed anymore. He's got to right. He's got to go and become the person who's worthy of her love, as she has worked to be the same for him.
Right, and
so sweet.
It's a very beautiful story, and we don't just see that in her. We see that in all the women building his plane. We see these women who are very honorable. They all understand that this building this plane isn't going to bring their husbands back from war. Yeah. But building this plane is a way that they can contribute to the same cause that their husbands are fighting for, their husbands and their sons. It's a very beautiful moment. And it's especially beautiful when Theo says, fine, you don't have to respect me. I am still going to give it my very, very best. And it earns his respect. It earns his love. He really does treat Theo like a daughter by the end of the movie.
Right.
Because he, and you're right, it is for Theo's honor. he's fighting for her because he's like, no, this is someone who has worked hard and who is not, you know, who has not been cruel or unkind to me. And she has been an honorable individual in
she's
a very different way.
She's been kind of stubborn. And
sure, but aren't we all?
Kind of pushy, but like, she's just the character, you know? And,
right.
And he's like, okay.
All right, well, all right, come on. We'll be family.
Yeah. So I want to ask this question. What, besides the ones that we have mentioned and besides romances, what in media or books and stuff too, do you see good representations of men and women, things that are healthy for society, things that are going to improve people that aren't romances? Because those always lean towards kind of those things, and also not Lord of the Rings, because
Lord of the Rings.
So good.
So here's kind of the tricky part of it. That's a great question. That's an excellent question. Thank you for asking that question. I will answer that question
after these messages.
Now. Once I finish stalling, I'll answer that question.
You can just think about it for a second.
No, I've got it. Oh, okay. I was making a joke. Oh. Come on, man. Come on.
I'm a professional.
It's Avatar The Last Airbender. Of course it's Avatar The Last Airbender. Yeah. Because you're right. It's a great question because relationships are a perfect way to, or romance, excuse me. Romance is a perfect way to analyze relationships, right? Romance is literally just focused on the relationship between two people.
Right.
And things like Pacific Rim has a guy and a girl kind of figuring each other out and working as a team. And that's cool. But it's still a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's still a buddy love story, right? At the end of the day, it's still about two people learning to appreciate each other and working as a team. And, you know, romance is just two people learning to appreciate each other and working as a team to have the best makeout session possible.
Woohoo.
Yeah, love to see it. I mean, don't love to see it, but happy to hear about it.
I love making out.
But the Avatar The Last Airbender is crap at romance because they're kids. Kids are bad at romance.
True. That's true.
But they end up having really amazing examples of masculinity and femininity, and a really good example of two excellent women characters who embody this dichotomy is Katara and Azula.
Don't say Katara.
Katara, yeah, okay, come on. Katara's great.
Sure, whatever. I don't like her. She's annoying.
Katara
drives me bonkers.
No, Katara's awesome.
Sure, whatever.
I've never understood people's dislike for Katara.
She's so needy.
All right, I get it out. Get out of your system.
Okay. So people are like, I like Katara. And I'm like, sure, whatever. But like, she's just whiny all the time. And maybe she is an accurate representation of women.
No. I'm cutting in. Let me get into it.
She is cool sometimes when she does the water thing. But
the water thing. Come on, Mary. Let me get into it. Katara.
Go ahead.
Fine. May. We'll pivot to May and Azula.
I love May. No, go ahead. Katara and Azula.
Well, Katara is a motherly figure. You can actually compare the two of them very, very closely. Both of them are the princesses of their appropriate cultures. Both of them lost their mother, especially to the Fire Nation, right? Both of them have a sibling, a brother, an older brother, actually, who is entirely trying to be a leader and trying to be respected, when both of them, Katara and Azula, are both highly capable. There's a lot of similarities between the two. It's why
That's why they duel off at the end.
It's why they duel at the end, is because the battle between the healthy feminine and the toxic feminine is actually at the soul of this story. And it's at the soul of Zuko's story, right? Because for Zuko, Azula does represent the toxic, dangerous, consuming mother in his life. I'm having so many thoughts. My mouth can't keep up.
You said that and immediately I was like, I'm going to take some notes for Lost World.
Yeah. It's exactly who she is. She is someone who is demeaning and condescending. She's controlling. She is like the Barbies in the Barbie movie. Mm-hmm. She is manipulative, and she is always trying to find ways to stay on top of everyone else around her. She uses her femininity to control.
I feel like Azula has a little more depth than a lot of the Barbies, though.
Absolutely. Azula has tons of depth.
Much more.
Because Azula is the product of this dangerous society. Instead mm-hmm. of turning to the society and saying, I am not going to be a part of this cycle, instead she says, I am going to perpetuate and rule this cycle. I am going to be in charge of it. It's why she goes nuts at the end, because
she can't have control.
She can't have real control. Uh-huh. Right. Exactly.
She is like 15.
It's fine. You shut up. You shut up. But Katara is the opposite. Katara is a part of the cycle of violence, and she chooses not to be a part of it. Katara is a motherly figure in that she is not nourishing. She is... it's the word.
Nurturing?
That's it. Nurturing.
She's nourishing.
She's nourishing.
She's like a good old stem of broccoli.
She's nourishing. She is someone who is, she's cultivating. She's always trying to cultivate each other's talents. She's always mm-hmm. Very supportive, and she's always talking about hope. And even though she sometimes does not even meet her standards of, she's the painted lady, right? She goes and is the painted lady.
Right.
She is, at the end of the day, someone who has these very, very high standards for society and for herself, and she tries to move everyone in that positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's why the Southern Raiders episode is so powerful, because when she goes to kill the man with Zuko, Zuko takes her to the man who killed her mother, and she is about to kill him with 1,000 icicle spikes, which is just the coolest moment in the whole story. The reason that moment hits so hard is because her forgiveness of him, maybe not like full forgiveness, but her mercy towards him is proof that she is not going to be a part of the cycle of violence and a part of the danger of wars and of culture. And she is instead going to transcend those things. So we have a very positive feminine figure and a very toxic feminine figure in this story. And I think that there's a whole YouTube video that I watched about this, and it's amazing. Also Pilgrim's Pass. But what do you think? I've talked for a minute. What do you think about that?
I think that's really good. And I'm kind of wondering, I'm like, hey, what if all of the really popular stories of our time right now are all because they have positive men and women in them, like representations.
Explain.
Like Harry Potter, where Hermione is definitely a girl. She's not trying to girl boss her way to being the best. You know, she's the best because she puts the work in. And,
right.
You know,
right.
She doesn't have to be a man to do it.
There's never a moment where she's like, she needs to prove herself because she's a woman. She is just Mm-mm. wants to prove herself because of deep-seated insecurity. But she's the best.
Right.
She is the best.
Right. And like Annabeth in Percy Jackson.
Heck yeah.
We've talked about recently.
Heck yeah.
Where it's like, yes, she, compared to Hermione, she's a very serious character.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of going, you know, with her Athena thing of just being like, I'm wise, I am in my head, right? Like, she's much more of an introvert, I guess. But she still doesn't, I don't know, she doesn't ever say like, oh, you don't respect me because I'm a woman. Like, she doesn't.
Right. She's like, you don't respect me because I'm a child. Like,
right. Which is fair.
No, that's fair. Yeah, you're 12.
But she's extremely capable too, and she puts the hard work in. And then Lord of the Rings, we have the blonde chick and the elf chick.
Eowyn and, I almost said Guinevere. That's not right. It's
such a good name.
Eowyn and, we all know, Gwyneth Paltrow. That's not it. Gawain? No, that's the Green Knight. Oh my gosh, I am just choking right now. You'd think that if we had a podcast about this stuff, we could recall things off the top of our heads.
Sorry, Legolas, Galadriel is... not the right one.
Oh, hang on. Are you talking? We're not talking about Galadriel.
We're not talking about
Arwen. We're not talking about Galadriel. Arwen.
Arwen and Eowyn.
Arwen and Eowyn.
And they both are women and they represent very different things in it. And I mean, Eowyn, she like kills Sauron at the end.
No, she doesn't. She kills the Witch King. Okay. But
yeah.
Oh my gosh. First, you don't read the books, now you don't watch the movie.
Whatever. Don't bring it up.
We're bringing it up. No. We'll tell that another time. We'll have a story time episode where we just tell the crazy stories about us.
Don't.
That's such a good story. It's one of my favorite stories.
Okay, fine. Later. But she kills the Witch King.
She kills the Witch King, and she does the I am no man moment.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment isn't like a girl boss.
Like women are better than men. It was just kind of like a fulfilling of the prophecy that he was never going to see coming. And
yeah.
She was able to do it because, once again, she put the work in. She was there.
Right.
She sucked at cooking. She is not a woman because women have to cook.
Maren. Make those jokes. Oh, they've been canceled. It's over, Maren. It's over. Look at our Twitters are leaving.
You come here in my house.
No, but Eowyn is doing something that is after the tradition of the Valkyrie, right? After the tradition of the Amazons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe not the Amazons, but she is choosing. She's saying, I am going to fight as well. I am just as passionate. I am just as capable. And the men are saying, we don't want you to fight because women are valuable. Okay. Women are valuable in our culture. If you die, then we can't have kids anymore. You're the only person who can produce an heir.
Right.
Right. To our country.
That's a good point.
But you're right. These characters are very honorable and these characters do put in the work.
And those are some of the biggest stories right now. You know, like things that we look at and we're like,
they're cultural touch.
Awesome.
They're like myths almost for us, mm-hmm. right? Like they are the kind of stories that we base our culture off of, right?
Right. And I mean, like the classic Disney films and such,
I love
and be like, those only could happen because the men were better or the women were better than the men.
Princess and the Friggin' Frog. Princess and the Frog. I'm telling you. Like, Princess and the Frog is an incredible movie because it is about a woman putting in the work.
Right.
But the theme of the movie is you don't need to do it alone. Right? Is that you can... It's about community. Right? The movie is about community.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it.
We keep saying, like, the women put in the work, like, saying that, like, men don't have to put the work in. Like, men are putting the work in, but for women to be doing the same adventure-y things as a man and, like, work on the same level, they do have some natural gap they have to fill.
Is there a flip side? We're coming up on the end here, but I want to ask, is there a flip side? Is there an opposite story where it is about, I mean, besides like The Pacifier featuring Vin Diesel, right?
So funny.
But is there a movie?
I thought it was so stupid.
It is so stupid. It's so dumb. But
let's see here.
We have a lot of stories about women who are filling in the roles of men when men are off at war or men are just not around or men, you know, there's lots and lots of stories like that where women are entering into the world of men and they are trying to participate, even though it is a world that wasn't built for them. What's the flip side?
I first thought of Beauty and the Beast, where the Beast is... Jordan Peterson talks about this a little bit, where he is like, Beauty and the Beast
is... You have
is,
to do the voice. It, you have to do the Kermit voice.
I can't do it.
The Beast here. Well, you know, the Beast. Go ahead.
So he says, like, that's like the women fantasy, that she comes to a man who's a monster, and because she is good and because, you know, she's beautiful, she can change this monster into a man.
Right.
That's right. Like the woman fantasy thing, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Like, I would agree with that.
Sure.
And
of course, he supports it with like 50 psychological studies. So it's like, you know, don't take our word for it.
Right. Go watch him. He's awesome. But kind of a little bit behind that would be he has to put the work in to release the monster that he is.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying that the flip side of women entering man's world is actually man, like, leaving man's world, right? Like man abandoning the things that make them men. Like men. I'm doing air quotes again.
Not men, but monster. Because all, I feel like all people have monster, right?
Yeah, everyone has a shadow.
Right. So if man leave monster, then come to woman, then...
and then release monster on dishonorable man.
Right, right. And then we're like, that is, in a way, him abandoning like the natural man in order to exist in a society to work well with the woman.
Right.
So... I can't think of another one off the top of my head, which isn't a romance. Because
that's okay. Give us romance.
I mean, like Flynn Rider. Like Flynn Rider goes after natural man, meets woman, realizes he wants a life with woman, and then abandons a natural man.
But can we have a story like that for women, right? Can't we have a story about a woman pursuing the natural man, right? Or the natural woman, uh-huh. I guess. I don't mean to say a woman pursuing a man, but because what you're describing is very much is the hero's journey, right? Is the selfish desires that you fight and that you work on until you can become selfless.
Mm-hmm.
You can have stories like that about women as well.
Right.
So what we're talking about here is there are stories of women who enter the male like workforce or enter, you know, the warriors, right? Joan of Arc style people. Mm-hmm. But where are our stories of, I mean, I guess Incredibles 2, right? Where Mr. Incredible has to stay home and be a dad and he's kind of crap at it, right? or like a stay at home dad, I guess.
Right.
Where are those kind of stories?
That's the thing. People aren't interested in that kind of story for a woman. Because if a woman is going to do the hard thing, she's going against her own nature to be able to produce like results for kind of a guy's story.
Sure.
So,
but no one wants to see a man go against his own nature. We're doing a little air quotes, but a man going against his own nature so that they can, like, you know, take care of kids.
Right. But like we see that, and that is kind of a, like in the Santa Claus or in Night of the Museum. Or in...
Oh, Night at the Museum is a really good example, right? This is a dude who wants to be like a, you know, he's a top security guard.
Okay, the Santa Claus and Night at the Museum are the exact same storyline.
Give me a second.
They're divorced. They have a son.
Oh my gosh, it is. Oh, my brain is breaking.
They have to do something magical in order to get their son to be able to stay with them.
They have to cultivate the Christmas spirit.
Yep.
Oh, it's the same movie.
They're the exact same thing. They do something magical to get their son.
Oh, it's about men who want to be men who are not respected, who have to learn how to cultivate a family. It's not about the North Pole. It's not about Christmas. It's not about a museum. It's not about hubba bubba bubblegum guy, right? It's about cultivation. It's about I am going to be a member of my community. It's not about like I'm going to be the tough masculine machismo guy. I'm not going to be the super duper provider man. I am going to be the head of a community, and I am going to put aside my needs so that I can cultivate the joy and kind of well-being of the people around me.
Right. But once again, that's the man's story. We don't see that from a woman's perspective. Like, we don't see the story of a woman besides like maybe Hallmark movies where she's like, she's a tough woman executive in New York.
But that's the same woman, right? That's the same character. She's a character who wants to be the machismo, I'm super awesome character. Uh-huh.
And then she meets Sawdust Man. In Christmas Tree Village, and
he crawls out of the dirt, just like, hey, come here, we're gonna have Christmas.
And they go ice skating, and then she learns the meaning of Christmas, right?
She learns the importance of being like the head of a community,
right?
This is Danya's.
Have we told them about that?
We haven't said this on mic before.
Okay,
we have. We the only thing that we've said about it was last week. We talked about how Danya's is a story that we don't even want to talk about on the podcast because it's so good that we don't want to lose it to anyone.
That's true.
Even Circadia, if someone wants to steal our ideas, you can go for it. We have it all recorded and put online. We have a record, you plagiarist, right? And you're not as good as us. Let me just put it out there. Your imposter syndrome is right. if you're stealing from us, you aren't as good as we are. That's right. Listen to me. Your insecurities are right about
Don, yes.
Go to therapy. Stop stealing our crap. We have it recorded. The cops are on their way. I like to see him try. But Donya's.
Do not tempt them.
Donya's is a story that we've talked about mm-hmm. that is very much about women building their community.
We'll definitely do for Donya's in the future. Once we make that, I think when we're preparing to make it, we should record all of our stuff, but then release it after we have made the comic for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm fine with doing. I'd love to do Donya's after Circadia. I'd love to mm-hmm. do Donya's. I do Donya's now. It's a great freaking story.
I love Donya's.
When I was writing idea, I was doing just like a writing down idea session for it. And I got emotional. I almost started crying. I was listening to Porco Rosso music, and I had the big final scene in my mind happening, and I got really emotional. It's like I teared up. I'm very excited to for that one.
That one is my Porco Rosso, my love letter to
yes,
Miyazaki
yes.
from
Miyazaki
Porco Rosso.
And Stregonona.
Yeah. Bon little Italian.
A little Italiano. Hey.
You see our hands doing the Italian
you
thing?
Can, yeah, you can see them.
Yeah.
You can hear me doing it. But the, I guess it's kind of like Howl's Moving Castle. I think mm-hmm. Howl's Moving Castle is about a woman who is cultivating her... Oh. It's cultivate, which it's very much Beauty and the Beast, right? It's a very Beauty and the Beast story.
Meets a monster who conveniently has a very attractive human form.
Yes, very conveniently. Adorable little child, Chip, and the kid, and then a fire creature, Lumiere right, and right, Calcifer. Right. Great book. I loved the book. The book is so good.
They're very different. We'll talk about that a different time.
We'll talk about a different time. Right now, we are wrapping up. So
we don't see that a lot in women, seeing the let's come back to being a woman, like the innate and natural abilities of a woman besides things like Hallmark, cheesy Hallmark films.
Yeah.
So I'd like on our next creative corner, mm-hmm. I'd like to see if we could come up with a story.
Sure.
That's
yeah,
like that.
I want to make it clear, though. There are a lot of things that are innate, right? We talk about innate. Like, we talk about nature. Like, men are naturally better at strangling a pig. Women can strangle pigs, right? Women can grab a chicken by the throat and spin it around until it's dead, right? Like, women are just as capable of, as men in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of people who are outliers, who don't really belong, like, you know, in their... like assigned kind of group, right? There are women who are good fighters. There are men who are good homemakers. I think Bluey is a really good example of this. Mm. I think the dad is a wonderful father.
Yeah.
And he's lots of fun. And he's a great homemaker and he's a great cultivator.
Right.
And I think that they're just as good as stories and they're just as good people who fall outside of the kind of the
gender roles.
The general rules. But we are talking about very large general rules. Not to discourage or, you know, leave those people out, but just mm-hmm. these are like psychologically and throughout the course of history very general rules. My dad told me a story the other day. I told him I'm not going to grad school. I am going to be an author. And I said, I'm sorry, like I know that I've put a lot of like he said you're apologizing to me, but he said there's a story. He said we passed this massive statue out here in Georgia of this man wearing a panther skin, and he comes from this epic poem. Yeah, it's their Beowulf, mm-hmm. you know, this epic poem. It's very ancient. They kind
George
of
the country,
right? To George of the jungle, actually.
George of the Washington.
And he says that this man. He said that there's a story. That this story is really like the basis for all of their cultural decisions. Mm-hmm. And in the story, the main character goes to his dad and says, "Dad, I'm going to marry this girl. And I want to marry this girl." And the dad says, "First, you must apologize." And the boy says, "What? Like, why do I have to apologize to you?" And he's like, "You first have to apologize before anything else. You have to apologize to me right now." And he says, "I don't, like, what?" And he says, fine. You know what, Dad? I apologize. I don't know what for, but I am willing to apologize and I'm willing to just, I am sorry." And his dad says, "When you're willing and you're ready to apologize for something that you don't know that you don't know, then you're ready to be married." Thousand-year-old poem.
Oh,
human nature has never changed.
Oh my gosh.
human nature has never changed.
Something that you don't know what you're apologizing for, you're ready to be married.
And Dad said, like he said, he said, look, you're willing to apologize to me. You're willing to come to me and tell me this. You're ready to be an author. Like you're ready to, like you have the guts to actually go out and do this.
Aww,
and I was like, dang, Dad, like,
thanks, Dad.
I got emotional. I got emotional. I was eating like a hot dog at the time. And I was just like on the phone with Dad eating a hot dog. Like, thanks, Dad.
Ow.
Ow. That was really nice of you.
That's really funny. That's, I mean, very sweet. Because it was very similar when I told Dad I wanted to pursue art, not through college.
Yeah.
And I told him, and he's like, that's good. And I just started crying. I'm like,
and he's like, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, thank you, Dad.
this poor man, the very emotional child.
Yeah, we're like the two most emotional kids in the family. We get so,
so
fired up so easy.
So embarrassing.
It's really embarrassing.
He's like, I'm proud of you and I still love you. And I'm like,
I love you too.
Okay, so we have learned a lot today.
Yeah, we talked about all kinds of things. We talked about how stories are we've talked about all kinds of things.
The hard cut.
We've talked about how men and women are kind of this eternal dance with one another to create a beautiful society and to create beautiful each other.
That Barbie didn't represent in a super great way, but that's why it will not be a founding myth.
No, it was a fun movie, but it'll be gone in 10 to 15 years, right? We'll never remember it, but we'll remember Dune and Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and Avatar and Mr. Darcy and Pride and Prejudice.
And we will always look up to those characters, and people might say, like, I don't know why, but it's because we see ourselves in these characters and we want to see
We want to be the
our
most,
own lives and everyone else.
We want to be the most honorable version of ourselves, right? And we want to cultivate that in one another through however we do it. You can find Sibling Scribbles on YouTube and Spotify, and you can find our webcomic, Shepherd Called Bales, at shepherdcalledbales.com. And you can find my D&D writing on DriveThruRPG. And you can find us.
You can find me at Trader Joe's.
You could.
It's a possibility.
You might. Like, actually.
That's where I'm going after this.
You can find me in the sewers outside of your house. I am watching you. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful day.
Bye.